This is Julie at Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to our Christmas episode of Dogcast Radio. It's episode 8. In today's episode, we get an update from Kimberly on the Swissy puppy she will be importing next summer.
He is to die for. He said there hasn't been a good Swissy male like that in Switzerland for a while.
If you're looking for good, healthy dog food, look no further than the Three Dog Bakery.
The industry is so ripe for bad doggy puns. We have things like pup cake, pup tarts, cauliflowers, rollovers, Great Danish.
And have you ever regretted teaching your dog a trick?
I taught him how to bark on command, and eventually that drove my dad nuts.
I am still waiting patiently for a Swissy puppy. And I chatted to breeder Kimberly McDonald about how things were progressing. As I've mentioned before, until recently there were no Greater Swiss Mountain Dogs in the UK. And Kimberly McDonald, who is a Rottweiler breeder, Somali Rottweilers, is planning to import Swisses and start breeding them. She's doing this meticulously and by the book, and she's trying to give them the best start they can possibly have in this country. It's a long process to import dogs into the UK. She has Luca, who is currently growing up in Switzerland with his breeder, but the search is still on to find a good bitch. Recently, Kimberly and her family visited Luca in Switzerland.
And, you know, I'm getting so many good reports about Luca on my website. If you go on my website and look at the guest books, you won't understand some of them, but you can tell they're meant... And basically, it's in German a lot of it, and I've had to ask Inga, who does my website, to translate for me. And basically, they're all very, very jealous that I'm getting Luca.
Yes.
And Baker. One breeder in Switzerland who's having Gloria off, Margaret, went and collected Gloria on Thursday last week, and he said to her, he is to die for. He said there hasn't been a good Swissy male like that in Switzerland for a while. Look at him. And he said, who's having him? And she said, he's going to England. And he goes, oh no. And she said, but you can use him at stud if you want to later on, you know. And he said, he's absolutely gorgeous. And he wanted to take him. And he's one of the top breeders in Switzerland.
Oh, wow. I mean, I don't know anything about the pedigree, but he's just beautifully, you know, looking in those eyes.
I know. Apparently, when Margaret's been socialising him, taking him to the train station and everything, he's been trying to get on the trains with all the people. And he's going to his first puppy training party this week, and he'll meet his sister Ginger there, bless her. And they'll probably remember each other, so there'll be some 50 cuffs going on, I should think. But he's just coming on leaps and bounds, and as I said to my husband, he's so much more than I hoped for. I mean, I know over the years what to look for in a quality puppy, and I knew the instant we walked into Margaret's. It's okay seeing him on photos, but there's nothing better than seeing him in birth. And I knew, looking at him, just looking at him alone, how good he was, you know? Watching him move, doing a bit of standing with him and everything else, and he's just coming on so well, bless him. And I'm so pleased. And I'll be, you know, Margaret said, he's going to do you some... He's going to go to some shows before he comes to you, and...
Oh, brilliant.
So I think there's quite a lot of people across Europe looking out for him now.
Excellent.
We just had an a little thing on the guest book from a guy, a Bernese breeder in Scandinavia, wishing us happy Christmas and everything, saying what a lovely puppy Luca is. So it's really coming on. And there's a lot of, still quite a bit of jealousy out there too from, people that can't get hold of him, And Margaret still, she still gets phone calls. She's still getting them at least once a week.
Gosh.
And I've just had an offer through an email of a lady in Poland who brings them, and she's got a bitch puppy, and she's offered it to me.
Oh, and what
she's looked at Luca, and she's looked at what I'm trying to do and everything, and she said, I would be so happy if you could have her. So I've obviously emailed her back and said what the requirements are for the pet's passport and everything, because Poland comes under the EU. And I've asked her, I need to know the health results for parents and grandparents first off. I need to see pictures of her, because she's, she said there were a couple of bitches and they all show quality. And I said, I need to see photos, and I need to see photos of parents and over. And I've asked her several other questions. And if it's a go, that puppy's 11 weeks old now.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
So we might get her. So we just have to wait and see.
So, is that the sort of the only bitch that you've got?
I want to get that. I want to get a bitch in from Kathy in America too.
Oh, right.
But Kathy won't send me anything unless it's good enough. I just have to wait and see with Kathy. So she's a professional lady and she's studied and everything. Yeah. So, you know, I know not to keep sort of sending her email saying, what day, you know, because she'll just send me one and she'll say, this is your puppy. And because I know what to expect from her and it will be as good as Luca, if not better.
Yeah, yeah. So we'd still be on target then for sort of coming over 2006.
Yeah, he should be here, providing he is teacher level is good when he has the blood test for the rabies. He should be here in July. We'd go over and get him in July next year. But if it's low, then he would have to have another rabies shot, then another month later. So it puts it back till August if that happens. But hopefully it won't. So.
But that would only be a month delay.
Yeah, it would only be a month delay, but unfortunately, because Switzerland and Sweden are both rabies-free, they don't inoculate their dogs with rabies unless they go outside the country, and the majority of dogs stay there, you see.
Yes.
So because that's what the vet explained to me when I was out there, that he was concerned that Luca, because his parents, his grandparents, hadn't had the rabies in their system, he was concerned that the teacher level would be low, meaning that he would have to have a top-up of part of rabies. He did ask me, should I give him 3 shots of it now? And I said, no way! That's way too much for a little puppy, you know.
Yeah.
Just one, and we'll see how it goes. Because Evie, my bits that I've got here, the rotty bits, she'd never had rabies in her system before, and she was pet passported up over a year ago now, and her teacher test come back fine. So I'm hoping Luca will be the same. So he's shot up now. Luca's not a cuddly baby puppy anymore. He's chewing everything, she said. He's chewing all the wood and trying. She said he's looked at her Christmas tree and thought, that's my next target, you know. And poor Margaret, and she said to me, she said, I love him, she said, and it's going to hurt me when I let him come to you, but she said, you know, she said, I will be glad, she said, because, you know, she said, it's hard work, and she's in her late 60s, bless her, so, you know, she hasn't got many years that she can keep doing this, you know, she's looking at smaller breeds now, so, and she's hoping that she's passed everything on to me to continue it over here, you know, and she can always have, or her friends can always have something back from Luca and use him in the near future, so it's not like he's totally lost to Switzerland. The breed warden went to see them last week, and he gave them all 100% clean bill of health, so they were lovely puppies. Fantastic. Very upset that Luca's going to England and not staying in Switzerland still, but totally understands and wishes all the best for Luca and me in the future.
Brilliant. And we want him over here.
I know. Well, he's coming.
I know.
And when he comes, he'll be the best male Swissie here at the time.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can, you know, get some girls in, and because there's a couple of ladies up in Yorkshire now that have contacted me, and they all want to, you know, have puppies, and one lady wants to go and perhaps get an older bitch in as well, but she wants me to, you know, guide her and help her through and everything. And they love looking at his photos on the website. He's growing, you know, so and you know, it's not going to be too long now, so it's starting to happen. So and the KC are going to look at the portfolio in early 2006, so that's all positive as well. So it's all looking up, and you know, won't be too long, bless. So and soon he'll be like 6 months old, and I'll be like, oh my god,
it's here. Yeah.
And when he comes, he'll be as big as our donkey Rottweiler Dexter when he comes, because they're, you know, tall as each other. So but and there's several people put on the on the website about me being able to have my photo taken with Hannibal, because he was such the sought after dog in his day. I mean, he's over 10 years old now, and people, some breeders were being naughty, like I said to you before, saying he'd been dead for a couple of years. He hadn't, you know, they were trying to sell their grandsons from him, you see, and they were saying that he'd been dead, and Margaret said, well, now your photo proves that he's alive and well and looking great, you know. And so many people said, you know, you were privileged to stand and sit by that dog to have your face, because he's almost the perfect sissy. You
know? He is really handsome. He's got a sort of a majesty about him, hasn't he?
He's just lovely, and you know, brought Lump to your throat. My husband was like in awe of him, and he's sitting there having his pictures taken with him and cuddling him, and he leans on you. That when you know a Swissie's leaned on you, you know, and you get a sort of dead leg after a while. And you know, and he tries to, you know, they don't jump up, so like, you know, the puppies do, but the adults don't. And he's just lovely, you know. And I just, and it's going to be such a good role model for Luca too, to be around him, you know. Already they slept, I sent you those photos today, where they're sleeping together in the basket.
That is
Margaret,
gorgeous.
Margaret said she's going to have to get a bigger bed soon, so the two of them can share it together.
Well, so. That was what was so lovely, that Hannibal was, you could see he was sort of squashed up a little
bit. No, and Luca was taking over,
And you thought, that's beautiful.
he's just naughty.
But the picture with you and him, you can just see what a huge dog he is.
I know.
Can't you?
But you can see also how correct, his head is to the standard. I mean, the Swissie should have a longer muzzle to the width of its head, yes? And he's just perfect. And he's lovely. And Luca is very, very, very similar to him.
Yeah.
In markings and everything. And Margaret said to me, he's going to have a very similar head too. So.
Yeah. Are the regulations the same with bringing a puppy from America?
Yes. It has to, because they did away with the Bali thing where you could bring from point A to point B. They brought in pets passport, so everything that they advise people to bring everything in on pets passport, and it is exactly the same as it is in America. But they stipulate on carriers, that's where you have to be very careful, because they only stipulate certain airlines. And that's changing all the time, because most of them, they're not up to speed on the proper requirements.
Yeah.
You've usually got to educate the airline.
Mm.
And, of course, the risk of bringing a dog from that far away on an airline is like what happened with my friend's Nufi they bought from America. When her plane landed and the lady was there when they opened the cargo doors, her cage was upside down.
They hadn't
attached it in. She'd been injured, and they've never got her in whelp, and she's always been nervous, and yet she was never like that when they went to see her.
No.
And it was a BA flight.
That's dreadful.
So, and that is always the risk, because you can never, never guarantee that the cargo handlers are going to be kind to them. Because a lot of the time they see a big dog and they just want to antagonize, wind it up and be unkind to it. Some are good, that you get the few, but... a lot of them just, doing their job and they don't care and they bash the blinking crate around everything else. But when you're coming from a long, farther distance like that, you want to make sure that the crate is securely fastened in and, it can't ever come unstuck,
How will you bring Luca? Will he fly or will you...
Well, no, we want to drive. It's a 12-hour flat-out drive without stops, but we'd have to stop going and coming back if we took Alex with us. We would probably drive over and pick him up. It all depends, but if it's July or August, they're going to be the two hottest months anyway.
Oh yes, of course.
You see, and he'll at least have air conditioning in the car.
But
we'll just have to play it by ear to nearer the time. So Margaret might be able to drive so far. Because we know when we went to Bali. Flew into Bali, the French quarters there, because Bali is in three countries,
Well,
the airport is split up into three countries. You can go out into France, Germany, and Switzerland.
Oh, wow.
When you can drive the same, so Margaret could sort of drive to Bali, because it's only an hour and a half from her house, go through the French bit, and we could pick him up from there.
Yes.
And then it's not so far to drive, and then drive across sort of northern part of France and down and across to the Eurostar. He has to have 24 to 48 hours before he boards and arrives at Eurostar. He's got to be done by the vet with Drontal for the worms and Frontline for the ticks.
But other than that,
it's going to be here before we know it, I think.
Brilliant. As I mentioned, Kimberly is a Rottweiler breeder, and she is a breeder that does not dock the Rottweiler's tails. If you wish to find out more about Rottweilers or Greater Swiss Mountain Dogs, you can visit Kimberly's website, homepage.ntlworld.com/KimberlyMacDonald1, or you can use the click-through link on our website. Also on our website, you can see pictures of Luca, the Swissie puppy she's waiting for, and pictures of Kimberly with Hannibald, and a gorgeous picture of Luca and Hannibald in their dog bed, cuddled up together. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. As we've been making Dogcast, we haven't always got it right first time. So we thought, as a Christmas treat, we'd share some of our bloopers with you.
How many dogs does it take...
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. Today on the news, we have a firefighter who is dog's best friend.
The legal system that is going to the dogs.
And scientific discoveries abound.
But first, let's hear who polls the most pooch-friendly points.
We referred to Paris Hilton's pet problems in the very first episode of Dogcast, Now, according to the New York Dog Magazine's online poll, it's official that she is the worst celebrity dog owner. Editor Leslie Padgett said of Paris, "First she loses Tinkerbell, then she ditches her for a cuter dog, then replaces that dog with a ferret, then a kinkajou monkey, and then, I gather, a goat." According to the poll, the best celebrity dog owner is Joss Stone, who not only cares responsibly for her own poodle, but volunteered at an animal shelter to help pets affected by Hurricane Katrina.
So, Santa Claus, take note. Paris Hilton is on the naughty list. Joss Stone makes it to the nice list. Someone who definitely deserves an extra present this Christmas is fireman Richard LeBlanc. Pixie, a small terrier crossbreed he rescued from a house fire in Salem, America, was obviously having serious health problems and had stopped breathing. Undeterred, Richard administered mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to the dog. Pixie was then given oxygen by another firefighter and taken to a vet. The dog survived and is doing well, and no one else was injured in the fire. According to Captain Alan Dion, Richard LeBlanc's treatment of Pixie reflects the firefighter's code. Save lives first and property second. It's always life first, and that means every life.
In Berlin, Germany, a teenager is suing her mother after the woman gave the girls guinea pigs and dog, complete with a litter of puppies, to a rescue shelter. The mother was angry about the puppies, so the girl had resorted to locking all the animals into her room. However, the animals were all sent to the shelter, and what's more, the mother signed an agreement with the shelter, insisting on a condition that her daughter would not be offered her pets back. The police are still carrying out investigations into this sad case.
Meanwhile, in America, a dog has been taken to court. Andy, a German shepherd dog working for the Athens County Sheriff, took part in a raid on a convicted drug dealer. The drug dealer claims the search was illegal and that the dog could have attacked him or any of his associates. Although the drug dealer also claims he's a dog lover, he wants police dog Andy charged with several different crimes, despite the search having found 50 pounds of marijuana. Andy has acknowledged paperwork by signing his paw print. The case is ongoing, and Andy has the county prosecutor offering to defend him personally.
So, do you think he'll end up in the doghouse or the jailhouse? And now for the science bit. In Washington, an animal behaviourist claims that when dogs pant in excitement, they're actually laughing. Simonette is a professor of animal behaviour and has studied dogs playing. Eliminating other behaviours like barking, growling, whining, and so on, she concluded that apparently the panting they do is canine laughter. Patricia Simonette's discovery has been used to calm other dogs within a shelter. When the sound of dogs laughing in this way is played, the dogs become quieter and seem less stressed. This obviously has implications for making dogs more settled in shelters, which may make them easier to rehome.
And finally, are you still looking for a Christmas present for your dog? If you haven't found the perfect present for your pooch, how about a mobile phone? The Pet Cell is the latest development in keeping in touch with your dog. The small device, 5 centimetres wide, 2.5 centimetres thick and 9.4 centimetres long, is attached to your dog's collar and performs a variety of tasks. Two-way communication is possible, plus GPS capability means that you can keep track of your pet and even be given a warning if your dog strays outside certain boundaries. Knowing where your dog is even when you can't see him would be invaluable for those heart-thumping moments when he wanders away off lead on a walk. Temperature is also monitored, and again the device will phone to warn you about variations. A wireless camera feature might be used in search and rescue or bomb squad situations. Plus, concerned owners could keep an eye on whoever's looking after their dog when they aren't there. You can find out more about this intriguing product via a link on the Dogcast website.
So, do you think its uses could be extended beyond dogs? Well, like children.
I was thinking of maybe getting you fitted with one.
Thank you. Well, that's all for us today. Have a great Christmas, and we'll be back in the new year with more doggy news.
We're carrying on sharing our bloopers with you, and it's easy to misread things.
Did you know the smallest dog breed is the chinchilla?
We all like good food, particularly at Christmas. But make sure your dog only gets to eat what's good for him. Grace tells us about some of the festive food dangers.
Watch what you eat this Christmas, particularly if you're a dog. Most of us know that chocolate is dangerous for our dogs. It contains theobromine and caffeine, which can kill a dog. The effects may not be apparent immediately, but if you suspect your dog has eaten a significant amount of chocolate, get them to the vet to be checked out. The smaller the dog, the smaller the amount of chocolate that is dangerous for them. A guide of around half an ounce of chocolate per pound of body weight, but this varies according to the make and type of the chocolate. If you're a dog, stick to dog chocolate. As you're preparing your Christmas meal, don't be tempted to give your peelings to your dog. Peelings and any green-looking bits of potato are dangerous. Onion, and to a lesser extent, garlic, can cause anemia in dogs. Avoid large amounts of broccoli too. Lots of us have fruit and nuts around this time of year, but store them away from your four-legged friends. Grapes and raisins can prove fatal for dogs if eaten in large enough quantity, and some dogs find fruit too acidic for their digestion. Apple and cherry tree leaves and roots are toxic. Apparently, macadamia nuts can cause severe muscle problems, although effects vary between dogs. Even seemingly harmless ingredients like nutmeg can be hallucinogenic. If you have to use antifreeze, do so safely. Most dogs like the taste of it, but it will seriously damage their kidneys. Other items associated with Christmas, like alcohol, cigars, cigarettes, cocoa, coffee and tea, are all no-nos for canines. Other Christmas favourite pastime is kissing under the mistletoe, but it may not be puppy love. A small amount of berries can kill a puppy, and all parts of the mistletoe plant are dangerous to dogs. So maybe we'll have to find real love under artificial mistletoe.
Now, as we've been making Dogcast, sometimes we've just got silly.
Dog, dog,
dog, dog,
dog,
dog,
dog,
dog,
dog,
dog,
dog,
dog,
dog,
dog,
dog,
dog.
And now, 2 Minute Fiction. The Christmas Present. It was 2 days before Christmas, and almost time to go home for the evening. But when you're a vet, you get used to the fact that from time to time, people barge into your surgery demanding emergency treatment for their pet, and it won't always be at a convenient time. These cases are always the saddest, often road accidents, and it's always touch and go whether the animal survives. This time was no different. She swept in with her dog. Only this time it was walking at her heels, not clutched, bleeding in her arms, and he was as agitated as his mistress. "I want to see the vet now," she announced. "Who do you normally see, Mrs. Taylor?" asked Judith, my receptionist, doing her best calming down tone. It didn't work. "I don't care. I'll see anyone. Just get me in now," she shouted, while the dog skittered around her feet, giving staccato sad barks. I went to see what all the fuss was about, and Mrs. Taylor grabbed my arm, pushing me back into a consulting room. I waved over her shoulder to Judith that it was okay, I would sort it out, and allowed the Mrs. Taylor whirlwind to propel me. "What seems to be..." I started my usual professional patter, but she cut across me. "I want you to put my dog down." She spat the words out. Her breathing was heavy, and the dog pulled at the lead, scratching at the door in a vain attempt to escape. "Pardon?" I stammered ineffectually. "I want you to destroy my dog." She glared down at the offending Weimaraner dog. Without warning, she gave a vicious tug on the lead, bringing the unfortunate dog cannoning back against her knee. She was losing patience with me, too, now. "I want my dog put to sleep. Do you understand? Can you do it?" I realised this was far from the usual emergency consultation, where the owner would beg me to help their pet survive, pressing me as to what I thought their chances were. I looked at Mrs. Taylor, and down at the woe-begone Weimaraner Max, currently sitting panting, occasionally scratching his ear. I had seen them both a number of times since Max had first visited us as a gangly puppy. Max was gorgeous, he grew healthily, and while he was certainly boisterous, he had a lovely temperament. I couldn't say the same of his owner. She didn't empathise with Max, as most of my clients did with their dog. There was no crooning sympathy when he had his injections, no soft words of encouragement when he had to endure examinations. Over time, it emerged that she had bought Max simply as a biological burglar alarm. She felt her house needed protection. "Weimaraners are very defensive," she told me proudly, "and they don't shed much. I didn't want mess. But of course, he's grown so big, and he gets so excited when I let him into the house from the garden when I come home at night, that he makes a mess anyway. I had kept my face neutral, but I couldn't believe her stupidity. Small puppies grow into large dogs, and why on earth choose a breed that craves company and then leave him stuck out in the garden all day? And on top of that, to be surprised that he was pleased to see you? She had chosen completely the wrong dog. "Can you put my dog down?" she queried, exasperated. "But why?" I asked, bewildered. He bit one of the children. She glared down at him again, and he averted his eyes, drooping and whining. Mrs. Taylor had two daughters, and while she herself was cold to Max, they lavished affection on him. I marvelled at the way he stood for it uncomplainingly, as they cuddled, mauled, and climbed all over him, as children will, until it is pointed out to them that a dog is not a toy. He somehow understood that these small humans actually meant him no harm, and his short tail wagged throughout, and sometimes I was sure, despite their attentions. "Oh, my goodness," I said. "Max must finally have had enough. Is your daughter badly injured?" For the first time, Mrs. Taylor was hesitant. "No," she quickly recovered. "That's not the point. Max has gone savage, and I won't put up with him." Judith opened the door and popped her head round. "All right if I go home?" She wanted to go late-night Christmas shopping. "Yes, fine," I nodded, and she left. "What exactly happened, Mrs. Taylor? I mean, why did Max bite your daughter?" I have seen one or two dogs so aggressive they were dangerous, but while Max was clearly upset, he was not dangerous. "I'm not here to discuss the details with you. Will you put him down? Otherwise I'll have to go and find a vet willing to do the job." She glanced at her watch. I squatted down beside Max and stroked his head. "What's the matter, old boy?" I asked. His sad eyes met mine, and he nudged me when my hands paused in fussing him. Mrs. Taylor jerked on the lead again, sending Max sprawling across the floor away from me. "Did he break the skin?" I asked. "No, but..." This time I cut her off. "Then it was probably a warning bite. If you could just tell me the details, it would help." She frowned fiercely at me. "No, I want him put to sleep immediately." "I understand that you don't feel comfortable with him, but I might be able to rehome him for you." I was almost pleading now, pleading for Max's life. "No," she shouted. She started to pull him reluctantly after her towards the door. "Wait," I said, and she turned to look at me. "Are you absolutely determined to have Max put to sleep?" "Yes," she snapped. "And it has to be done tonight?" "Yes." She was getting really frustrated now. I thought for a moment. "Do you have any preference as to how I do it?" "No." She shut the door she had begun to pull open and dragged Max back towards me, sensing I might be willing to help her. "What will you do with the body, Mrs. Taylor? It's already dark. You couldn't bury him in the garden tonight," I pointed out. She snorted. "I don't want him buried in the garden. Can't you..." She waved a hand at him vaguely. "Get rid of him." I wavered. I just didn't know how I could help Max. If I didn't do it, she would take him off somewhere else. But to put a healthy dog down goes against the grain. I thought of how much I loved and would defend my own dogs, and yet how quickly this woman was prepared to abandon her dog. "Don't judge me too harshly." But I decided on the only course of action I could. I would make it as painless as possible for everyone. "All right, I'll do it," I said, "on one condition. You won't get another dog." "Don't worry," she laughed with no humour. "I have no intention of getting another mutt." I believed her. I went into the back office to select the bottle I needed. I filled the syringe with shaking hands. "Do you want any last words with him?" I asked. She shook her head. "Just do it." But she had turned away. Even she hadn't the stomach to watch her own dog die for no real reason. I felt Max's leg, located the place, pierced the skin, and depressed the plunger. His body relaxed, the eyelids slid shut. I stood up, still shaking. She still wasn't looking. "Is it over?" she asked. I nodded. I couldn't speak. I grabbed a blanket and covered him up. I think I was trying to hide my guilt at what I had done. I opened the door and ushered her out into the reception area. At the exit door, she suddenly turned to me. "What do I owe you?" she asked. My conscience pricked me. I couldn't take her money. Nothing. Just don't do this to another dog, okay? Don't ever get another dog. I watched the lights of her car disappear as she drove out of the car park. With dithering fingers, I locked the door and returned to the consultation room. I gently lifted the blanket off Max and sat down beside him. I stroked the velvety head, the muscled neck, the lean ribs. I reached back up to his head and cupped the side of his head. His ear was thin and smooth, but I realized that underneath it was something hard. I lifted up his ear, and with a fast-beating heart, I saw a long piece of plastic just visible from the ear canal. I grasped it and pulled it out as gently as I could. It was a piece from a plastic construction set, about half an inch square and a good 5 inches long. It must have been driving Max crazy. Then it all fell into place for me. One of those children had played just a little too rough with Max and pushed this plastic toy into his ear. Kids will be kids, won't they, if they're not shown otherwise? Max, in agony, had still controlled himself and issued a little warning in the only way he knew how. For this, Mrs. Taylor had wanted to extract her revenge on him. Well, at least I had done my best to make sure she wouldn't do it to another dog. I went back into the office and selected a second bottle. I filled a second syringe and again plunged it into Max's flesh. It should quickly reverse the strong sedative I had given him in the first injection. Not enough to kill him, just enough to knock him out fast and let Mrs. Taylor think the deed was done. It was with relief, though, that I saw his eyelids blink open, the tail wag at the sight of a friend, and his first feeble attempts to get up. I thought of my dogs and smiled at the thought of how Max and they would make friends when I took him home. I patted Max on his head, avoiding his still sore ear. "Happy Christmas," I whispered. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. We're carrying on sharing our bloopers with you. And you know when you just forget how to say a word? Now the UK has its own innovative site. Have you treated your dog to any of the goodies from the Three Dog Bakery yet? Do you know the fabulous philosophy behind their products, or how the whole thing got started? We found out all this and more from Dan Dye.
We fresh bake over 150 fresh baked, all-natural, wholesome, healthy treats and foods for dogs. And it really runs the gamut. And, of course, even the word gamut is a... this industry is so ripe for bad doggy puns. We have things like pupcakes, pup tarts, cauliflowers, rollovers, Great Danish. We have a line of bark and fetch biscuits that are in about 10 different flavors, and we make jump and sit bits, which are little training tools. But we also make cakes for dogs, celebration cakes, even wedding cakes for those bow vows, bar mitzvahs, all the holidays. We have a lot of fun with our business, and what makes it the funnest of all to us is the fact that underneath the silly names and the, you know, kind of creative concept, there really are serious underpinnings of good health and good nutrition and a great deep love for dogs and stuff. So we feel really fortunate, really blessed to be in a business that we love, with serving dogs whom we love, but also doing it with nutrition and a serious foundation to what we're doing.
Saying that about the nutrition side of it, how different is it cooking for dogs? I mean, are there things that you could put for humans that you wouldn't put for dogs, or, you know, the other way around? How does that work?
Yeah, that's very true. You know, dogs are omnivores, which means they will eat anything, even things they shouldn't. And so there aren't very many things that are dangerous for dogs, but there is a list of forbidden items that you might not wish, things you might not wish to serve to your dog, and it includes things like chocolate, Raisins. A lot of the things actually tend to be, depending on the size of your dog, you know, if a small dog eats lots and lots of raisins, it can lead to renal failure and things like that. But chocolate, caffeine, you know, human vitamins, you don't want to, that contain iron. That can be dangerous to dogs. Liver in large amounts can cause vitamin A toxicity in dogs. So you just have to kind of be careful. Of course, you know, anything like alcoholic beverages or things like that, tobacco, not to mention how stupid dogs look trying to hold a cigarette. But you just want to stay away from those kinds of things, onions. So there are some subtle differences between what a human can eat and what a dog can eat. But otherwise, as long as you stay fresh and wholesome and close to the earth in your ingredient selection, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be doing some good for your dog. Dogs are just like people. They are what they eat. You know, I feel so sorry for people who feed their dogs really low-grade diets and they don't vary them, and it's day after day after day. So these poor dogs, you know, are just having to eat this, you know, awful, toxic food day after day. They certainly can't go out and buy their own food. And, you know, over the long term, it causes tumors and cysts and bad health and oral decay. And, you know, it's just not a good situation.
Is that where the whole dog bakery idea came from, sort of wanting to do well for dogs with their nutrition?
Well, you know, in a sense, my partner Mark Beckloth and I, we started our company in 1989, so we've been kicking around quite a while. But it really had a true beginning. We had 3 dogs between us, and one of them was a Great Dane, a huge Great Dane, who was the most lovable dog you could ever imagine. But she was born completely deaf, and she was born blind in one of her eyes.
Gosh!
And about 6 months of age, she quit eating. For some reason, and Great Danes, you know, they really need good nutrition. They grow so quickly. And she began getting skinnier and skinnier, and we could see the ridges of her backbone and her ribs, and it was really becoming a dangerous situation. The vet didn't know, short of hooking her up to an IV, he didn't know what to do. And he suggested, have you ever tried cooking for her yourself? Because we had tried every type of food, and you know, we hadn't. We could barely keep our own selves fed at that point. We were just young, right out of college. He gave us some broad parameters, and we started playing around. We used whole grains and fruit and vegetables and herbs, and we concocted a vegetable beef biscuit that had lots of fresh garlic and a homemade beef stock. And, you know, Gracie began eating. And It really saved and changed her life, and she got over her fear of food or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. We used to kid her and say she was the first anorexic dog in the history of dogdom, but she recovered, and that really, a light bulb went off over our heads, and we baked some up and brought them to our vet clinic and to our local pet store and our local health food store in Kansas City, and they all ordered, and then within days they were reordering, and it turned out people were really interested in buying into the notion of fresh baked healthy treats for dogs, because in 1989 those things didn't exist. And so we tapped into something, and you know, just one account led to another account. We went from one account to 10 accounts to 50 to 100. Today we sell our products in over 10,000 retail outlets around the nation, and we have 43 dog bakeries.
Wow.
Sprinkled out around the country. And so it really has been, you know, I can't say that we have been an overnight success, for sure, but, you know, slowly and surely over the years we have grown and grown, and especially as dogs have become more and more a part of our families and beloved, you know, companions, more and more, you know, it just kind of goes hand in paw with what we're doing.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. And do you have any doggy testers for the food? How do you know that?
Yes, we do. But, you know, we're probably the only company in the world that does reverse animal testing. The humans eat it before the animals get to it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. We eat everything we make. But, you know, we do have an office full of dogs. Everyone here who works at Three Dog Bakery loves their dogs. And, of course, their dogs are welcomed into the office. They don't go into the production, into our baking commissary anymore because, you know, we do adhere to American baking standards, American industry baking standards, so dogs aren't allowed, but they can certainly come to the office every day. So I would say on an average day, we have about 12 to 15 dogs.
Oh.
And they play and romp around, and then they do a lot of tasting and testing and things like that. So I think we got it. And, you know, they're not all, some of them are kind of finicky, so it's really a good cross, you know, testing area.
Oh, so it's a perk then to belong to one of your workers then.
Yeah, you know, and plus we have our own dogs too, but they are not the world's most discriminating either. let me say that up front. So I don't know if I can trust their opinion or not.
No. I mean, Buddy's like that. He's a Labrador, so he's very into his food, and he's like, yeah, like that. What else?
Oh, we love to see 80-pound labs come in. Not that we don't love the little 4-pound chihuahuas, but you know, we like those big stomach dogs.
Yes.
We actually make more than just treats. We also do foods as well. We make a wonderful entree for dogs that is a USDA-inspected chicken.
Hmm.
It's rice and green beans and carrots and even the vitamins and the minerals that we add are all human quality, FDA inspected, really high quality, high caliber, very nutritious foods, unlike anything being made. It's like grandma's kitchen. I mean, even better if your grandma cooked like my grandma cooks. But really good stuff. And then we also make a crunchy baked kibble, too, that's in vegetarian or chicken flavored, and they're wonderful. Dogs love them.
Mm, oh, it sounds wonderful. Yeah, excellent. And what's the most popular, what's your best sellers?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we sell an awful lot of birthday cakes. I think the best one of the fastest sellers that we have is our Jump and Sit Bits. They're about the size of a U.S. coin, a dime, and dogs really snarf them down. We sell them in quart containers. And they're just wonderful, and they're great for training. We have some customers that leave them on their dog's pillows at night as a turn-down service. And, you know, those might be our most popular. We also make a sandwich cookie that's made with carob, and the filling is either peanut butter or vanilla. And they're like a very popular cookie here called an Oreo, and they're very, very, very popular.
Mm. I think the dogs must have to keep an eye on this stuff so the humans don't have a go at it.
That's right. I'm sure there have been a few squabbles late at night between the human and their dogs over the treats. The Lick and Crunch sandwich cookies are really, really good. We eat them here all the time.
Mm.
We put just a little touch of molasses in them so they have a slightly sweet flavor, and the carob is good. And you know, we really love it when we can bake fresh things for dogs that taste so good and they look great and the dogs love them. And for years and years, the pet food industry was really historically, it has not been a very great place to be. They've used low-grade ingredients that have been condemned out of the human food chain, and that is what makes the grade for dog food typically. And so we, since 1989, have only used human quality ingredients in everything that we make. And we really feel like we're helping raise the bar in the pet food industry. And I know we are, because some of the big players are now taking note. And even though, you know, they're not all the way there, but they're starting to use better ingredients.
Mm.
A lot of people are breathing down their neck, you know, because our dogs are our beloved family members.
Mm.
And we want the best for them.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, that really is one of our standards. If we don't eat, if we can't eat it, the dogs aren't going to eat it. And, you know, we're not just absolutely fanatical about it, but we're just using common sense. I mean, they're little living organisms, too. And,
yeah.
And if you continually, you know, push bad, old, nasty ingredients into their systems, of course, what else will happen? It will for sure manifest itself in poor health.
You can find out more from the Three Dog Bakery website, which is www.threedog.com. If you fancy cooking up something healthy for your dog, you can sample one of the Three Dog Bakery recipes provided to us by Dan Dye, which is on our website. There's also a link to the Three Dog Bakery website and links to their 4 books. These include cookbooks and Amazing Gracie, which is the story of the Great Dane whose life was saved through wholesome food. Now, as we've been making Dogcast, sometimes we just got silly again. Now, we've been having emails in. One was from a listener in Wyoming, Sarah, and she told us about an unusual trick her dog has mastered.
Okay, well, it started out when I taught him how to speak on command. So he's a naturally vocal dog. So, you know, when I'm treating my dog, I use whatever techniques or whatever skills come to him naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So he likes to bark a lot, and so I taught him how to bark on command. And eventually that drove my dad nuts, so I started looking around for something else to teach him. And I noticed that my dog sneezes and he's happy. So I taught him to sneeze on command by saying hachoo every time he sneezes. And he picked it up very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's his favorite trick of all. So when he wants to communicate with us, he'll go, hachoo, hachoo. And he's a real character to have around the house now.
I've never met a dog that could sneeze on command.
Yeah, everyone laughs when they see him do it. But
and that's his party place, is it?
Yeah. He's not very bright in general, but he's very good at picking up tricks.
Mm. Yes, my dog's like that. He basic training is just too boring, but tricks he will really concentrate on. What else does Willie do then?
He knows a gun trick. So you point your finger at him and say bang, and then I do this hand signal for lie down, and he'll lie down, and then I'll say crawl, and he will crawl forward, and I do the hand signal for crawl, and he picks up better on the hand signals than he does the vocal commands, except for the whole hachoo part. And then I'll say roll over, and he'll roll over, and he's just a silly little ham. And the more people are around watching him, the better he is. He doesn't have a very good success rate when it's just me and him, but when there's a whole bunch of people watching, then he'll go nuts, and he'll do every command, and he's got this little smile on his face, and his tail will be wagging.
Yeah he likes to play to the crowd.
Yeah, definitely.
And how old is he?
He is 5 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I think I taught him all his tricks when he was 2 or 3.
Oh, right.
And
will he do them for sort of your sister and your family, or does he keep it, you know, does he do them for you?
You know, I don't think they've ever tried to do it.
Oh, right.
I think he would if someone tried.
Yes, if there were enough people watching.
He's also a very greedy little dog, too, so he'll do anything for food. All the tricks, I train him using food because that's how he's motivated. He couldn't care less about, you know, a ball or a toy. You know, we praise him all the time, so if we praise him, if he does a trick right, he's like, oh, okay. But if there's food involved, he's like, yeah, I'm ready, let's do it.
Mm. It's really useful when they are food motivated, isn't it?
Yeah.
He says, great fun, your dog.
Yeah. I miss him a lot. I'm here in Wyoming as a volunteer, so I'm here for the year, and then I go, I don't know where what my next job will be, but this is other than my year in Scotland, this is the longest I've been away from my family and my dog, and I miss them so much.
Yes, yeah. Aw. Well, have a lovely Christmas when you do go back home to them.
Thank you so much. Me too. And I love listening to your show. I always download it as soon as it's available.
Well, good. Thank you very much. Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Well, I've never encountered a dog that could sneeze on cue. And if you haven't, here's your chance to hear. This is Willie sneezing on cue.
Achoo! 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 Good boy.
To really do this trick justice, you need to see footage of Willie, who's a sweet little Bichon Frise, and on our website you can see video sent to us by Sarah of Willie doing his sneezing trick and others from his repertoire. Now, I think this is fabulous. If you'd like to tell us about your dog and the tricks he does, get in touch. We wish you a happy and a safe Christmas from all the Dogcast team. Until next time, look after yourself and your dogs. As we've been recording Dogcast for you, some things have just taken longer to record than others.
How many dogs does it take to change a light? I'm sorry. It was her fault. It was me. She's just sitting there going... Right. How many dogs does it take to change a light bulb? Oh,
think of... Go on, carry on. A border collie...
Stop it!
Just do it, go on. Come on, Jenny, come on. Compose. Compose. Think happy thoughts.
I've heard that French is on his eyes.
Come on, think happy thoughts. Reg, okay, now go. Compose and breathe. Okay, go.
Come on.
You can do it.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What's the difference between Father Christmas and a warm dog? Father Christmas wears a red suit, the dog just pants. What's the difference between Father Christmas and a warm dog? Father Christmas wears a red suit and the dog just wears pants.
No. Oh, forget it.
Merry Christmas!